Hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 135. In this episode, we are waiting for Samuel L. Jackson to show up and talk about the new Marvel movie, Captain Marvel. Before we do all of that, though, I want to remind you that Three Drinks In is available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, and Radio Public. Just search for Three Drinks In podcast and you'll easily find us. By the way, I'm your host, Vince. Over there is Phil.
Hey.
Okay, so about that iTunes stuff, click subscribe, tell your friends, leave a review. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @3drinksinpod. That's @3drinksinpod. Like us on Facebook and email us at 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. I just want to take a moment, too, to thank everybody who has liked and subscribed and told their friends and left a review. We really appreciate that. I want to thank our new friend, Shannon. Good talking to you today. Hope you can spread the word and that you enjoy the show. And without further ado, here is possibly Mr. Samuel L. Jackson, if he shows up, talking about Captain Marvel. You ready?
Yep.
Here we go.
You want to get personal.
Where were you born?
Huntsville, Alabama, but technically I don't remember that part.
Name of your first pet?
Mr. Snoofers.
Mr. Snoofers.
That's what I said. Did I pass?
Not yet. First job?
Soldier. Straight out of high school. Left the ranks a full bird colonel.
Then?
Spy.
Where?
It was the Cold War. We were everywhere. Belfast, Bucharest, Belgrade, Budapest. I like the bees. I can make them ride.
Now?
Been riding a desk for the past 6 years, trying to figure out where our future enemies are coming from. Never occurred to me they would be coming from above.
Name a detail so bizarre a scroll could never fabricate it.
A toast is cut diagonally. I can't eat it. You didn't need that, did you?
No, I didn't, but I enjoyed it.
Okay, your turn. Prove you're not a Skrull.
What you drinking over there?
I have a cerveza Negra Modelo, or Modelo Negra, they're calling it now. Used to be Negra Modelo on the label, and now it just says Modelo, and on the bottom it says Negra. So I guess it's the same beer, it's just a different label. So I guess they have Modelo Especial, which is like the lighter version, and they have this one, which I like a lot more. And my local Mexican restaurant keeps it on draft, which is great, because we grew up going to a Mexican restaurant that I don't think they had drafts.
I think they had like two.
Yeah, and they didn't have Mexican beer on draft. They had like American light beer on draft, which I thought was an odd thing to have in a Mexican restaurant.
It's for the gringos.
Yeah, and but this place has this stuff. It's great. It's great on draft. It's one of my favorite beers, and it's underrated because it's not like a complicated beer. It's still it's still quite good though, and it's not like it's it's not as ubiquitous as Corona, which I think is terrible. But it's also not like a heavy beer either. It's still a relatively light beer, even though it's dark. So it's a good one.
Well, it's good.
I'm home tomorrow from work with a sick toddler again, so that's why I can have one beer before going to bed.
Oh,
that's the plan.
Look at you.
Yeah. Father of the year.
Yeah.
So, all right. So waiting for Sam to show up, and he's not here yet.
Should we go without him?
Oh, well,
like we usually do.
Yeah, we probably should. There was something I had a thought though. I kind of wanted to get into it a little bit, because as with all superhero movies that feature a strong female lead, I don't know. There's a political aspect to it that it's kind of the elephant in the room, and I wasn't really aware of how big a deal this was. Like I remember when Wonder Woman came out everyone was falling over themselves to say how great it was, and finally we have a movie with a woman in it, and you know, that movie was good, and there, you know, the people in it didn't offer up any sort of controversies or, you know, but apparently Brie Larson shoved her foot so far into her mouth that they're still trying to dislodge it as we speak. And I listened to the Red Letter Media guys talk about this, and they covered really the first half of their review was really about her. And
well, I don't want to rehash what they said.
No, I don't. But she did say one thing that perturbed the heck out of me, and I mentioned this to my wife the other day because it really, really sort of bothered me. So they had clips of her talking at some event. And her main complaint was that there were too many white men who were movie reviewers, and that's the reason that the films were getting mediocre to poor reviews in certain cases. And I was like, okay, well, that's like the least important thing on the planet, which is what the other guy said. Like, who really cares about that? And then she said something that sort of scared the crap out of me, and they had the audio of her going, you know, if you're a white dude, I don't care what you think about A Wrinkle in Time. It wasn't made for you. And I was like, oh, wait, no, that's really bad. Because then, you know, we're talking, so it's an effort to do that high school thing where you just kind of go, neener, neener, this isn't about you. But what it implies is kind of scary, and it's a little bit disappointing to hear somebody say that, you know, no matter what you think of the movie, good or bad, your opinion is invalid because of what you look like. And I'm like, well, okay, that's pretty much the nail on the head, right? There's no dancing around that one. You know, the movie's not made for you. So, you know, it rubbed me the wrong way, and it made her come across looking really quite petty. And I don't know if you caught that, but that really kind of that bothered me a bit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand that argument that I can't have an opinion just because I'm not the target audience. I mean, it makes no sense in the context of film reviewers, because a 12-year-old can't review a film correctly. And that's always the gag when they always say, like, well, the only people who'd like this kind of movie are 13-year-old boys and morons, like, when it comes to superhero movies and stuff. Yeah, because 12 and 13-year-olds don't know what they're talking about. So,
nor do they work for, like, you know, major publications.
Right, like, you cannot form a coherent adult opinion about anything. But, you know, just because I'm not the target audience for certain films doesn't mean that I can't derive some enjoyment. I found it was interesting. Someone on Twitter said, you know, like, I think it's great they have these films with strong female leads so that, you know, girls who like them can identify with this sort of thing. But they said, but I take umbrage with the idea that the girls have been sitting around twiddling their thumbs in the meantime, you know, like, and not just women, but people of color and people of different sexual orientations and everything. If the character is good and resonates well enough, they will identify with that. That's when I said, why do you think kids always love movies where there are no kids in them? Because the kids want to be those people as adults. You know, the first Star Wars doesn't have any children. Everybody wants to be Luke Skywalker. Everybody wants to be Han Solo, even the women, little girls.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, if you come up with a good enough character, it doesn't really matter as much. It certainly helps. It's nice, you know, like Black Panther is a black guy. Like, okay, great. And that's fine. But kids and sometimes adults will find a connection if it has anything to do with them as people.
Yeah.
Which I think is nice. There were moments in this film where I was like, yeah, let's do it. You know, and I'm a dude. So
when you get right down to it, too, isn't that the point of this kind of media, is to give people an opportunity to view the actions of another person who might be nothing like you at all, but you find commonality with them? I mean, after a while, it all just sounds like stuff you learned in the third grade, and we all wonder why we're talking about it anymore.
Well, I mean, I'm an English teacher, and I do this. I do this all the time, especially with freshmen who are doing it to me now. Today, even, it happened. Why are we reading this Shakespeare play? It's such a loaded question, but in the end, I boil it down to, well, the language is very nice. I said, but also the situations and the characters are universal, and the things that these people are going through, you will someday go through. And I don't phrase it as like, oh, maybe you'll know someone like that. I say, you will go through this. When we were reading Julius Caesar, I'm like, you know, you won't kill your friends or anything, but you will have a friend. I assume. I was like, but you will have a friend who thinks he's too big for his britches. It will happen.
It might happen in the next 2 hours.
Right. Like, it could happen at football practice later. So we can identify with these people in terms of the human condition. And that's why the best movies, television shows, songs, all that stuff touches people. And, you know, it transcends the differences we have. That's why we watch them.
Yeah. All right. Well, that being said.
Also, Brie Larson has a terrible sense of humor and self-deprecation. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I heard her in some kind of like one of those weird YouTube videos where they ask her weird questions off camera and then she's supposed to react to them. And a lot of people did that, and like they're very charming about it, and they're like, you know, goofy and having fun. And this is a humorless person.
Yeah, she doesn't seem to have any like, oh, it's like a robot that needs to be told when to smile.
Yeah,
like the programming's like, this is a joke. You can like hear the joints move like a tin man.
Humor indicated. Humor indicated.
Yeah.
Christ. Which is why we invited Samuel L. Jackson and not Brie Larson on the podcast today, but he's not here yet. So what did you think of Captain Marvel?
Okay, so I didn't hate it, but I was bored most of the time. I was very bored, especially the last 20 minutes. I was not in the crowded theater, and I sat all the way in the back so I could make notes on my cell phone. And I spent most of it looking at Twitter because I was like, this is boring. You know, I knew that I saw that big twist coming a mile away.
Oh, and, God. Yeah.
And then
big twist.
You're just sort of waiting for her to become so powerful that she can't be stopped, which is what happens. She becomes so powerful that you're waiting for the scenes to just end because she can't be hurt. It's like Superman.
She's bigger than Superman, for Christ's sakes.
Oh, I mean, she can shoot fire out of her fists. That's cool. But it was definitely like nobody posed any sort of challenge to her. So the interesting parts of the movie were the beginning when she was trying to understand what was going on. And we as audience people are watching Samuel Jackson also do that. Like, he doesn't understand anything either. You know. So that part was fine. But the rest of it, I was like, eh, this is whatever. It's a thing I saw. What'd you think overall?
I really felt bad for a lot of these. I don't know if I felt bad. I was disappointed in the movie for a variety of reasons. Number one, that I paid to see it and it wasn't very good. But also because, you know, invariably, we're going to have a political debate about this like you and I kind of did 10 minutes ago. I just wish these movies were better. You know, like Wonder Woman was fine. It wasn't great, but there were things about it I liked. And as a DC movie, it was probably the best of those bunch. But this wasn't good, and it had nothing to do with the character at all, which is what people will tell you when they want to whine about it, is they say, well, you didn't like it because it's a woman. The character itself is what bothers you. You know, any other, you know, criticism that you have of how the film was made and the people who played in it, you know, is really not important, because what you're complaining about is just the jumping off point, a woman superhero. And that's, of course, that's nonsense. But it's like, if there was a really good movie that starred a, you know, that had a strong female lead, I'd be so happy because we could probably stop talking about this, or at least I wouldn't have to go through and feel kind of bad or worry about who we're going to annoy.
Well, I don't do that. I know, I really don't care.
Yeah, I you know, and we're pretty, you know, pretty small time here, but it's just like, I don't want our first big exposure, you know, if it were to happen here, to be us, ripping on Captain Marvel and these two jackasses from Three Drinks In. They don't know what they're talking about. I'm like, it's just because we do, and this movie could have been better.
Well, it definitely could have been better.
You know, it can't. I'm not so sure the character allows for greatness in the film, like in a lot of the other Marvel characters. But it certainly could have been better than this. I just wish. My lament is that I wish these things could be more competently executed. There were things that could have been done that would have made this like, yeah, this was great. Not like, oh, this was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen, because the character is flawed. But ugh, I wish it was just better than what it was. But my biggest problem since, you know, is Brie Larson can't act.
Is that what it, okay, so we could just talk about the biggest problem in the movie, which is Brie Larson, in that I don't know if she can't act, because I saw her in one movie once and she was fine.
What was that?
21 Jump Street. It was, and she was young in that. She was playing a high school kid, but I think she was in her early 20s at the time. And she looked very different. She looked like a normal person. Like, she's jacked in this. It's ridiculous. Like all those characters are, you know, mm-hmm. Tons of training for months on end, yada, yada. But I couldn't tell if it was her bad acting or if they told her to be that, like that, like completely emotionless the entire movie, except for a smirk, or if that was just the way she was written.
Part of it is the writing. There wasn't a whole lot of for her to work with, and some of the things that they're asking her to do in terms of humor were just totally missed the mark, and were wildly inconsistent with what was going on in the movie.
Right. Well, so she was terrible in that she was stoic through most of the film, and then every tenth line would be this like joke or smirk. And like this, like, I'm better than you kind of like eyebrow raise, like Mr. Spock would do, you know, like mm-hmm. Fascinating. And I'm like, I can't tell if they just needed a joke, so they gave it to her, or is she supposed to be that way? And she's just a bad actress. I can't tell the difference, which is not a good sign for either of those options.
The movie has awful tonal issues. You know, for the most part, it's fairly serious in terms of what's going on, but interspliced throughout it sporadically is this sort of Guardians of the Galaxy type vibe that they're trying to go for, because they found that that worked, that people liked, you know, and they're trying to make a lot out of the nostalgia factor of it being a 1990s movie, you know, and just shoehorning in soundtrack bits here and there. And I'm just like, okay, I get it, it's 1994 or whatever. You know, when they freaking played No Doubt, I was like, you really had to do that.
Yeah.
So the inconsistency in tone of the film, which she is largely, her character was responsible for, you know, clouds the issue whether or not she can act. I don't think she can act because, you know, there are times that she was required to do something and she just didn't do it. She just stood there and just didn't do anything. You know, parts of the film that were not, where she wasn't trying to be jokey or, you know, swashbuckly or whatever, you know, when she was supposed to be thinking or feeling or, like, you know, learning something, you know, she couldn't do that. And granted, that's a lot of silent acting, but she was deadpan up there. It was like a fish.
Yeah, very stone-faced.
Yeah.
I mean, it was also, so her character is supposed to be this person who had her memory wiped, or at least hidden from her. She had 6 years of a different life. And so when she goes back, you know, she happens to be on Earth. It wasn't sure if she wanted to be like Thor, fish out of water. Like, oh, this is, your blockbuster is strange to me. You know, it wasn't like that, in that she was like, okay, I'm on a planet. And then certain things she would just know. So she would be talking to Nick Fury and asking him questions and be like, tell me something that no one would know so I can prove that you're really who you are. And he says, I can't eat toast diagonally. And she kind of smiles, like she tricks him into saying that. I'm like, would she know what toast is? Like, do they have toast on her weird alien planet? And like lots of little things like that. It's always just like, should she know how that works? Or she's perfectly fine with that? Like, is she an alien or not? Like, I don't understand.
That's a good point.
Does she know she's an alien? Because she bleeds blue.
Yeah, and she's convinced herself that she, you know, is Kree. Is it Kree?
Yeah, she thinks she's a Kree, even though she doesn't look like anything like any of the Kree, because the Kree have blue skin.
I mean, none of them look like anybody. I mean, Jude Law doesn't look like the other guy, doesn't look like this guy. Like, they all look different. So the big reveal, which wasn't the big reveal, that, you know, she's not really, you know, Kree, was the guy from the Guardians of the Galaxy movie is in this movie. And you know he's a bad guy. And there he is, just like walking around, and go, oh, that's the guy from the other movie. And when they said Kree, I was like, isn't that the bad guy from Guardians? Like, and then, of course, towards the end, they show you the little guy on the ship with the, you know, with the hammer and the whole business, and you're like, oh yeah, okay, I was right. Like, and I was doubting myself, going, I'm pretty sure that they're the bad guys, and that's what we're gonna find out pretty soon. But also, they didn't explain any of that, because none of the people in their little squad looked like each other. They were different aliens.
Most of them had blue skin.
Yeah, but not all of them. One guy was black.
Right.
You know, and Jude Law didn't have blue skin, and it wasn't clear, like, were they just kidnapping people and making them into warriors based on what they could do?
I think that was the idea. And, like, you kind of get the hints that these people, like, expand and conquer places, and then they become part of the group. Like, kind of,
you know, like, they assimilate people either willingly or unwillingly, like they did with her.
Because even when they're on the train in the very beginning on the alien planet, most people had blue skin in that scene, but not everybody. Some people looked like Jude Law. So I'm just like, I guess some of them just look different. And I don't know, like, was he too pretty to put blue makeup on? I don't understand.
Yeah, the world building for them was very vague.
And they spent more time on the Skrulls.
Yeah, they're much more interesting in terms of the fact that they were, you know, sympathetic characters who were cloaked as, you know, evil-looking goblins.
Yeah, well, that's the big reveal in the comics, like, 99% of the time, they're the bad guys.
Hmm.
And they always are, like, infiltrating, and it's, like, a big deal. And the idea that they made them the good guys in this one was, like, like, supposed to be like a big shock, but even though it was fairly obvious that like something is amiss here. You know?
Oh, I saw it coming down the Holland Tunnel. There was never, you know, you're just waiting for it. Like, when are they going to tell you that this is the case? Mm-hmm. And is there another thing that's going to happen that is like, I wasn't sure if it was like a double blind, like, okay, so this looks like it's going to be what the plot ends up being. But maybe there's something else that I'm not seeing that they're going to be like, but no, that did not happen.
It wasn't anything like that.
Okay.
I just thought that that hurt her character on top of maybe not acting well. It was that I wasn't sure what her role was supposed to be. Was she so foreign that she couldn't remember or what?
Yeah, everything about her was vague. And because of that, trying to shoehorn in humor alongside seriousness didn't help with any sort of clarity in this case. Sonny Bunch from the Washington Free Beacon, also from the Sub-Beacon podcast, had a really good point in his review that I would never have thought of unless I had read it, which is that, so she's working alongside Ben Mendelsohn, Samuel L. Jackson, and there's another guy in this movie that I can't remember. Jude Law. All of them are, you know, have very distinct and powerful voices. And they're all very different kinds of voices, too. And he said that her voice is, like, not there. It's weak and tinny and, you know, better suited to playing a teenager in a 21 Jump Street movie than it is to playing a superhero. I mean, like, Gal Gadot's voice is distinctive because she has an Israeli accent or has a Hebrew. I don't know how you describe the accent, but she has a Middle Eastern accent, so it makes her sort of exotic in a sense, and she's playing a character who's from an exotic place, and it makes her kind of regal and grand, and that's not the same character as this, but just her voice gets lost when Samuel Jackson walks up and does his thing, like his patter.
So Brie Larson has no presence.
Yeah.
Gal Gadot is indescribably attractive. Like, oh, it's fascinating how unique she looks. Brie Larson looks like anybody, which is, you know, she's still a movie star. She's
gorgeous. Yeah.
She's much prettier than I am. But she doesn't hold her own when she's put next to other people. And I noticed this especially because I happen to be an English teacher and I'm watching the 1970s version of Julius Caesar. And Charlton Heston is in that film. He plays Mark Antony, and he's very good. He's Charlton Heston. And he's playing opposite the guy who plays Brutus is Jason Robards.
Oh, Jason Robards, sure.
Yeah. Good actor. He was in what, All the President's Men, something like that.
Yeah, he played Ben Bradley. He was like, you know, it was funny watching him play Ben Bradley in that movie, and then watching Tom Hanks do it later on. Like, oh, Jason Robards is much better in this than.
Yeah, Jason Robards would be better replaced by a sock puppet. I actually cringe watching the movie. He's horrible, and when I like Googled it to see if it was just me. Apparently all the reviews in 1970 agreed with me that he was horrible. And they were like, we don't know what he's doing on that stage. Like, he looks out of place. He looks like a dude walked in and put a toga on. And Brie Larson, except for one scene, looked like that. Like, she looked like someone, like the key grip had wandered onto the stage and they just kept filming.
Hey, you'll fit in this. Put this on.
Yeah, like you fit in the suit, so just stand next to Samuel L. Jackson, which is, I don't know how you fix that. Like, maybe you just need better direction to be like, okay, this is what you should do in this scene. You're supposed to be angry, so be angry. And that's more than just standing there and flipping your hair back. You know, like, you got to act a little. You know, like, beyond speaking, you got to act.
Do something.
Just do something. Just do it.
Yeah, she doesn't.
The only time I thought she looked great was before they went into space and she was changing the colors of her suit. And with the little girl.
Yeah, the interaction she had with the kid was cute. Yeah.
And she went through like this, you know, different colored getup. And then she settles on the one that she ends up with, and like they zoom back and the music swells. I was like, God damn, she looks good in that outfit. Like, that is a good looking outfit. Like,
yeah.
Like, suddenly she looked very powerful and the girl was looking up at her in awe. And I was like, oh, that looks good. And then she flew off the screen and it ended. But I was like, that, you know, it's possible. You have that.
I hated the scenes with the kid.
Well, kids are not, you know.
But like that, the entire reason for having that kid in the movie is because she is your target audience. You want to talk about who the people at, you know, at Disney wanted to, well, not, I shouldn't even say that, who people want to tell white people they're really making the movie for? It's that kid, because there's this ridiculous scene where they're explaining what they're going to try to do. They're going to rejigger the ship out there to, you know, fly up into outer space and get to the other, like, hidden spaceship or whatever. And they said to the little girl's mom, do you want to pilot the ship? And she's like, hell no. You people are crazy. You want to fly up into space into the ship that wasn't designed for it to do this and this and this. And the girl's like, Mom, you should totally do it. I'm like,
I know.
No child in their right mind would be standing there looking at aliens and super people and going, yes, Mom, please fly on this insanely dangerous mission and leave me here with my grandparents. Like, yeah. they would be terrified.
It was very saccharine.
Oh, my God. And, like, the only one making sense was the mother. She was like, I can't just do this. You know, like, she had no stake in the thing. She was like, I'm just helping you because I'm a nice person. But, like, I have to protect my, no, none of that. It was all, like, guilted her into doing it. I'm like, this is really, really dumb. You know, it was just, drove me freaking crazy. But, anyway, I was going to say something else. No, I just went right out of my head.
Mm. Well, I mean, before that, it was how she looked in the suit. She looked good. The suit looked good.
The suit was fine. I mean, it's basically they do a full body cast of a person and they mold this thing to fit them. And, I mean, the costuming doesn't get overlooked, but I think, you know, over the years, we've made so many of these movies that we really come a long way in making everyone look fit. So, like, Michael Keaton looked great in Batman, but if you watch that movie again a few times, you kind of look at it and go, why is he walking like that? Well, he couldn't turn his head.
Yeah.
So whenever he wanted to leave the room, he had to turn his entire body, shoulders first, in one direction, and it looked really stupid. Once they get to, Batman, it wasn't even, I think it was Dark Knight, till he could really turn his head.
Well, there's just, when Chris Evans walks on in the Captain America suit and they zoom out and he turns his neck and he looks into the future or whatever, he has a presence. You sit there in awe of him, like, holy crap, guy looks like, he was just poured into that suit. She didn't have that for most of the movie. She just looked like any old person on the stage. I was like, oh, well. Her and her dumb smirk.
So yeah, this is not a great movie. Here's a question I have, though. What the hell is she?
She's a person.
She's a human being.
Yes, she's a human being.
And like we talked about the flaws in the casting decisions, and we can get to some of the directorial decisions as well, but like, the story that they tell is that she's an Air Force pilot that stands next to a big engine, blows it up, and gets superpowers. And I guess that's sort of Marvel's thing, is that people come across these things by accident. They're not born with them. You know, Bruce Banner gets zapped with a bunch of, you know, gamma radiation, and all of a sudden he becomes the Hulk. And, you know, you think that kind of thing would kill him. But most of the accidental things that give these people superhero superpowers, they're mysterious. So, like, the spider bite wouldn't have killed Peter Parker, but because it was a special spider, it gives him powers. We don't know what what certain kinds of gamma radiation does to people. So in this case, it gives Bruce Banner these abilities. But standing next to a giant engine core full of energy and you blow it the hell up and it destroys a bunch of other crap, why wouldn't it destroy her? And why instead would it give her these fantastic abilities? It's just such a straightforward... It's a straightforward thing. This is a thing that blows up, and when it does, it's very dangerous.
Because
unless you were written in the plot as it not being the case for you.
Because she was using the Infinity Stone energy. It wasn't just like the usual combustion engine. You know, it wasn't gasoline powered.
Right, yeah, I guess.
I have gasoline powers, you know. She shoots oil at people.
You know, I get it wasn't a vat of kerosene here, but it. All right, so... But then again, you've established the fact that the Infinity Stones are so dangerous to everybody that, like, Thor can't even hold on to one. You know, isn't that how he gets his eye burned out? Is that Thanos burns his eye out with an Infinity Stone?
No.
How does he lose the eye again?
The girl in Thor 3 hits him with a knife.
Oh, come but on. No, then
so, come but on, there, earn your nerd cred here.
No, but there's a scene in Infinity War where Thanos puts the stone to his temple.
Oh yeah, but he doesn't lose his eye from that.
Right, but he could like it's a like I'm going to kill you. He turns to Loki and says, "I'm going to kill him unless you give me what I want." So, yes. Thor can't even touch an Infinity Stone without dying or getting killed or getting hurt. Rather,
this particular stone has been shown to do weird things and give people weird powers. So like. The Scarlet Witch and her brother, they got their powers from the other stone. The one that was inside, like, the staff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know why they did it. Usually what happens is, when it comes to plot stuff, it's they're given these powers by mistake, by doing something foolish, or they're given these powers because they've been doing something heroic.
Mm-hmm.
Captain America gets them by being brave. He volunteers to have these things. She blows that thing up willing to kill herself rather than let Jude Law take it. And so it's like that heroism is sort of rewarded, I guess.
I guess. It's murky. It doesn't jive with a lot of the things that they've set up. And there's nothing about it that's sort of mysterious where it leaves a hole. Like, well, maybe this is how this happened, and, you know, where even the characters didn't expect something to behave a certain way. Like, you know, we were trying to do this, and all of a sudden you got powers. Isn't that weird? No, she just blows the thing up and gets lucky in that it doesn't kill her. It just, so would anybody have been standing there and gotten the same powers? It just, it's stupid, okay?
Yeah, probably.
It's dumb. It's not a good...
It's more of the... We don't know what we're doing. Like, we don't know how to handle these things.
I get thematically what they're going for, but the teensy weensy bit of logic I need to sort of bring me along.
Well, you're never going to get that, so just give that
up.
Right,
but in
every comic book.
In every other one that you do, in most of these, the way they get their powers. It's all nonsense. I'm not saying like, oh, well, of course that makes sense. But at least I can follow you, you know? Like, it doesn't make any sense, but you just pull a few things and don't worry about that. But, you know, it all kind of, you know, Steve Rogers, it's a serum. Great. They put him in a big, you know, iron lung and they shoot him full of this crap and he, you know, and 20 minutes later, he's enormous. I don't need to know what this serum is. I don't need to know the chemical makeup of it. I just know that that's what it is, and it's not confusing. You know, it's just, it's how it, okay, fine, you
so
know.
So why is this bothering you now?
Because it just seems very lazily done. Like, they didn't bother to explain what kind of engine was, what she was doing with the Tesseract to create it. Not to mention, like, that all happened in a flash box when they find the black box from the crash. I'm like, that's an awful lot of information to be contained in a black box.
Well, I think it like triggers her memory.
Okay. All right,
that
fine.
That becomes her memory. She starts remembering.
Yeah. It just, I don't know. It's, they've set it up that these things are really dangerous and these things, you can't touch them. And if we're going to create energy out of it, then it's going to be...
It's not that you can't touch them. It's how they're used,
I guess.
So, like, you can hold on to some of them, but you have to be careful the way you use them. So, like, even in Captain America, when he's trying to stop the Red Skull from having one of these things, the exact same one,
mm-hmm.
you know, it gets knocked out of whatever container it was in, and it falls, and the Red Skull just picks it up, and he gets beamed into space. Now, how come that's never happened before? No one ever dropped it in the history of the universe? You know, and then when it falls, it like melts through the plane and lands into the ocean. I'm like, how come it's never been that hot before? She put it in a lunchbox in this film. It was getting tossed around like it was nothing. You know, it didn't explode then. I mean, they're bizarre objects that don't always have a ton of rules. So
yeah, it just, I guess what really ultimately the thing is that it makes her so unbelievably powerful.
Well, that's my problem, was that she was so powerful.
Yeah.
It
so,
was stupid.
So, like, how we get from point A to point B is, like, you get hit with a big blast, and you get some powers, and now you're a god.
Yeah. Now she can go into outer space. She can fly. She can take any kind of damage and be perfectly okay. I was like, well, this is a bit much, isn't it?
Yeah. It just,
like, it was just, that's what made it boring. I was like, well, this is very... Like, talk about going all the way to 11. Jesus.
Yeah. And they were trying to sell you on, like, well, she's learning how to do things here. That's why she's like, no, it's, you know, because the fight at the end when she kind of realizes what she can do is like, well, we're just waiting for her to beat them. You know, we're not actually going to see her fail at anything here. She can't. It's impossible. But, oh yeah, no. It's, so because she goes from 0 to 60 with it, I just had a hard time coming along for the ride with the character, both because the actress wasn't very compelling, and the script wasn't very well written. And I don't mind an origin story told out of order; like, it doesn't have to be like Superman or, you know, the, you know, Batman Begins or whatever. You know, and some things are fun when you get them, like, you know, things develop differently. You see somebody in the middle of a story and then you go back and figure out how they got there. That's great. But with all these things, I couldn't sort of hitch my wagon to this character. It would almost have been better if that had happened in the beginning of the movie. If instead of it being a big secret to both the audience and the character, it was just a big secret to the character and we watched it go down. And so now we know, okay, she's definitely not supposed to be there. She's really a human, and this is what happened to her, and it's kind of crazy. But they're taking advantage of her and using her to kill people. If we know that ahead of time, if there's no bothering to make a big reveal, which isn't a big, you know, it doesn't work, I think I'm kind of, I'd be more inclined to be with the movie at that point. Do you agree?
Yeah, something had to be done to make it fun. This wasn't a fun movie. I didn't have a good time. I was just sort of there watching it, you know, because it felt like I had to see it for one thing, which we can get to because of the other Avengers films. But it was also like, I know she's not one of these people. She just doesn't know it. And we're trying to figure out what the point of everything is, just like she is. And so it just becomes a waiting game. Like every time there was a flashback, which there weren't a ton of, I was desperately waiting for them to just be over. Like the scenes, I was just like, just let her know. Like when she first meets her friend back at like the house, you know, like, I haven't seen you in 6 years. You were dead. I completely zoned out because I was like, I know she was a fighter pilot in some kind of crash and she disappeared and got kidnapped. Let's get to that part, you know, like when the character doesn't know and you're just waiting for her to find out, it's very boring.
Yeah, especially if the filmmaker thinks you don't know what's going on. It's one thing to, you know, watch her be taken prisoner, basically, and manipulated, and you're wondering, when is she going to figure it out, and how far are they going to push her? And, you know, but I wonder how much they... Did they think we wouldn't figure it out?
I think they thought it was just enough of to keep it interesting. I mean, it's hard to do origin movies over and over again.
That's true. But
they figured, you know, well, this is something different. But it wasn't... In being different, it was just boring. The only actual surprise in the whole film was when they go to that alien ship above Earth, and it turns out that the Skrull guy, who you think is the villain, turns out to be the hero. Oh, he's actually looking for his family and not the Tesseract. And he says, like, I don't really care about that thing. My family has been here.
Yeah.
And I've been looking for them because I knew they would be nearby. And I was like, oh, well, that's different. I didn't see that coming, and neither did anybody else.
Yeah, because he was banking on everybody else wanting the Tesseract.
Right.
And so, like, I'll tell you where to get this incredibly powerful thing. And he said, I don't really care about this. I'm actually, you know, this is what I'm really here for. That's true. That was, yeah, that was kind of, it was touching, you know.
Well, yeah, it gave him a little bit more dimension, especially with all that rubber makeup on his face. But I was like, oh, okay. And like,
still a better actor than Brie Larson shit.
He's a much better actor. And I've seen that plot line in stuff before where it's like, I'm leading you to this thing. It turns out I'm here to find something personal to me. You know, like nobody knows who these aliens are except him.
Mm.
But everything else, like, oh, I wish he was a pilot. Oh, what was her real life like? Like, if you show the audience everything and now we're just waiting for her to figure that out, like, all right. How long is that going to take?
You'd need to make it more interesting, you know, than they did. But I think, you know, starting it from point A rather than point Q, you know, would give you a sense of how much she's essentially being tortured by having to do this.
Right. I mean, think about Wonder Woman, where that one was, she's going to learn that the world is darker than she thinks. Like, she's so naive. But that's a very broad concept. So when she goes out into the world and it's World War One, she can learn, okay, these are the reasons why the world is more messed up. And she has that. Like, we're learning those things with her because we don't know where she's going to go or who she's going to meet. Whereas this one, it's, I used to be a fighter pilot. And people used to give me shit my whole life because I was a girl. Well, that's very specific. And now that I know that, it's like, all right.
Yeah.
What else do you have?
She also does.
Was she a drunk? I mean, did she shoot up? What kind of life did she have? I don't know.
She also doesn't have any sort of real moment where she learns how to do what she does. She has this little montage of, you know, you have all these flashbacks where she sees herself falling down and getting hurt. And they would always cut away before the big reveal of her standing back up again. And this short montage of her throughout the years of getting back up after having fallen down is the only motivation she needs to learn how to destroy everything if she wants to.
Yeah, that was okay. It was brief, but I was happy that it was brief because everything else was already being dragged out.
That's true.
The idea was that, you know, Jude Law is constantly telling her not to use her emotions. You have to just focus on the things that we tell you to do. And then she realizes that, apparently throughout my entire life, I always used my emotions and I was a resilient person. And that's why that's what I need to do to be myself. So that's fine. It's just that the rest of the movie wasn't written well enough to pay that off.
Right. It seems to kind of come. It's visually interesting to watch her stand up in all of those different time zones. Like, you know, when she's a little kid, when she's a teenager, and then finally when she's in the present day. Yeah, no, she. It looked cool, but it didn't have any weight to it.
Well, it didn't, and it could have because it was a visually interesting thing, but she doesn't spend a lot of time in the movie questioning who she is.
No, you just know she doesn't know, but she's not really. Yeah, she's not really worried about it.
Yeah,
that's a good point. Like she knows something is wrong. She knows that there's something here for her to learn about herself on Earth, and that's why when they say to her, like, "Don't go anywhere, just stand still, and we'll come get you. It's going to take us 22 hours to get there." She's like, "No, I got to go run around and do things."
Yeah, like she's on the hunt for these things immediately.
Yeah.
You know, and she spends most of the time bad-mouthing Nick Fury and being like, well, you're a moron. You know? I'm like, he is helping you, you know. He's pulling his weight.
I thought he was very good in this. What'd you think of the CGI business?
I thought it looked good on him. It didn't look as good on Greg Clark.
No, Greg Clark.
Clark Gregg.
Clark Gregg.
That guy.
Yeah, the other guy. Yeah.
Why would you name your kid Greg Clark or Clark Gregg?
Either one of them is terrible.
Yeah. Scott Tom. My name is Scott Tom. Like, what?
It's Clark Gregg. His name is Greg. Yeah, so his face was kind of smoothed out.
Yeah. Samuel L. Jackson didn't look like that.
No. I remember, like, the first movie I ever saw Clark Gregg in was in State in Maine, and he looks skinnier, you know, like he's older now, so he has a more pronounced jowl, I guess. He's, you know, in his 50s or whatever. Here, they gave him like a Jay Leno chin.
Yeah.
And they were like, here's your chin. And I'm like, well, yeah, that's not his chin. He was a skinnier guy.
And a bigger widow's peak.
Yeah, seriously. I thought that it took me a while to realize that he didn't have the eye patch on.
Oh, really?
It just didn't register with me. I mean, the other thing, too, about Samuel L. Jackson is that, like, he's pretty famous. So I know what he looked like in, was it Goodfellas or whatever he was in, like his first movie? Like, his face wasn't quite right. He kind of goes like out at the temples. Something about it made it look somewhat strange and more round, I think, than it is. If you go back and look at like Pulp Fiction, it's like 20 years ago now. You know, he has more sort of sunken in cheeks and more, like a more narrow looking head than he had in this movie. But he's much older now, so he didn't look like they were trying to make him look young. He just looked odd to me because I knew what he looks like. But after a while, I didn't even, you know, it didn't bother me at all.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good after a while, you know. I thought he had the best jokes. I laughed twice this entire movie. The first time was when they were doing the alien autopsy. And yeah, they lift up the curtain.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it's junk. I was like, meh, that's pretty funny.
See, but like that was the kind of stuff about this movie that really, like, everybody else in it was so damn serious. And I don't know, like there was just chunks of it that were very serious and chunks of it that were not. And they were really trying for that Guardians of the Galaxy vibe where the whole thing was over the top and totally just bonkers. And everyone behaved in humorous ways. It was consistent in tone, whereas this was just not at all. And so that was funny, but it was also wildly out of place. You know, it just, yeah, it's very strange. Did not care for it. Anything else you liked about it?
I thought the Skrulls were really done very well. And like, I remember when she was chasing one of them, he was like disguised as a surfer dude and onto the train. And like, I think that was the first big, like, oh, okay, they are the good guys. They're running away from Brie Larson. She's shooting laser beams at him. And he's disguised as a surfer because they're in L.A. And he runs onto the train and he passes an old woman. And he, like, taps her on the shoulder and he's like, you know, pardon me. And he gets onto the train. And as she runs up to catch him, she bumps into the old woman and, like, nails her with her shoulder and then just sort of shrugs it off. And I'm like, huh, the bad guy was very nice to that old lady. And she was a bit of a jerk. And that's when I kind of started like, oh, they're the good guys, aren't they? And then when, like, he was, what's his name, Ben Mendelsohn?
Yeah.
When he was fighting Nick Fury, like, you could tell he wasn't going to kill him. Like, he was just throwing him around.
Yeah.
I was like, you know, a shape-shifting monster would probably be a lot meaner. So, you know, I thought they were done very well.
Yeah, they were certainly the most interesting.
Well, you know what it is? It's... Because I had that reaction when we first saw Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, I walked out of that movie being like, that was a weird movie. That was weird. Like, giant talking tree, little raccoon. There were lots of strange aliens walking around. If this had not been a Marvel movie, would anybody have gone to seen it? Because it's a weird sci-fi movie.
Oh, no.
You know, like, and I thought that watching it, too. I'm like, I'm really surprised they managed to pull this off because it's weird. You know, the way, like, Star Wars must have been the first time they watched it.
A lot of this reminds me of if you pull out the Marvel thing, this is a good point. What separates this from, like, a mystery science theater movie?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a little better than that, but not a lot.
Not a lot. I mean, that's sort of like, you know, it's the lowest of bars to clear, is to not be a movie that And I don't even mean like on a riff tracks where they, those guys will make fun of, you know, legit popular films that, you know, are considered to be modest successes, if not big successes. But like, you know, what of this reminds me of Space Mutiny? You know, that's sort of the question I tend to ask whenever I am looking at one, you know, and I never put it really in that context to say, what if this wasn't, you know, made by Disney? You know, what if somebody else made, you know, and didn't pour $200 million into it? Like, you know, what would Space Mutiny have looked like if somebody had paid $200 million to make it?
It's like Jurassic, the first Jurassic World with Chris Pratt. Like, I walked out of there going, that was an absolute piece of garbage. Like, that was a bad film. And someone said, like, that was a very expensive sci-fi TV show or sci-fi movie.
Yeah.
From the Sci-Fi Channel. It's like, yes, that's right. And this is sort of similar to that. Like, this wasn't very fun. It wasn't well acted all around. You know, some of the makeup was goofy looking.
The action sequences, by the way, were atrocious.
Yeah, they were bad. I couldn't see anything.
Couldn't see a goddamn thing.
You know what else was annoying? There were so many shots of like build up with the music, and then the music would cut out. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
Because she couldn't fire fist everybody. Like, she would just hit them once and it would stop. That would be the end of the action scene. So I was like, oh, there's the music. It's over.
Yeah, the music across the board was embarrassing. Like, just everything was just shoved in there. And
you know, it's the 90s.
You know, I couldn't quite figure out what Nirvana was doing in there. Like, oh, hey, Nirvana. I love that song.
I think that was, you know, that was the first time she was meeting the computers for the first time.
Was that the first time or the second time?
It was being honest with her for the first time.
Right.
So yeah. Come As You Are.
Mm-hmm. It's a great song. But like, you know, like they had garbage in there. And
yeah.
The band garbage, not the actual garbage. Or was it?
Ooh.
Yeah, no, just...
Did you stay for the mid-credits scene?
Yeah, I stayed for both, in fact. There were two.
I didn't stay. I heard what it was. So I was like, yep, I'm out of here.
It was funny. I was in the theater with maybe 10 people, and it's a small theater, so you can kind of see everybody when they get up. And I Google it as I'm sitting there, like, how many end credit sequences are there? And it says there are two. And well, it's a good thing I didn't get the soda. And... So the mid one goes off, and then everyone begins to get up. I went, guys, there's another one if you care. I don't know if it's any good, but I'm pretty sure that there's another one. And everyone kind of went, all right. They just kind of moseyed back to their chairs. I felt like I was the teacher going, you can't leave yet.
I didn't hear the bell.
There's still time. Yeah. I have you for 5 more minutes.
Yeah. The cat just spit up the cube, right?
Yeah, the flurkin.
The flurkin, yeah.
Yeah. So the thing about the eye scratching business, was that really anticlimactic to you too?
Yeah.
Because the whole time he's playing with the cat, he's like, oh, look at the kitty. And the cat's like, yeah, you know, you're cool, fine, whatever. And like, you knew that there was something with the cat.
Right.
You know, and if you were like, I'm not as big a nerd about this stuff as some people are. Like, did you know what that was?
I knew it was an alien. Yeah.
I figured it was an alien. I just didn't know that.
Like, that, I knew that, it was like, yeah, it was super powerful.
Yeah, it was alien cat thing. But yeah. Like, I thought it would end up being the woman, like the doctor. She made herself look, you know, turned into a cat. It's like, so she's not dead at all. She's the cat now. I don't know.
Oh, that would have been good.
Hey, I have an idea.
But like, why did it scratch him?
No reason.
I thought it liked him.
Should have. He protected it, and you know, was nice to it.
Mm.
Don't quite get that.
Did you enjoy the mid-credit scene?
Yeah, you asked that. Nothing really happened in it. They hooked the pager up to a thing. They broadcasted a signal. She showed up.
Yeah.
Which you knew.
Watch that.
she was going to do.
I mean, did you watch that trailer with the new Avengers trailer dropped today?
Right. What exactly am I looking at in that? It's just they're all going to go do a thing, but we don't know what that thing is.
Yeah, they're doing a very good job of hiding that.
Like, it told me nothing, which is fine. I mean, they're not really designed to give you information. They're so secretive about everything they do.
I think it was all the emotional part of it. They're really getting across.
Well, how they're all going to die?
Well, some of them are going to die for real because they didn't re-up their contracts. But that, like, so many people are missing and gone, and, you know, families are devastated and what have you.
Hawkeye seems, I think that's his thing.
Yeah, I think he loses his whole family.
Yeah.
And then, like, Ant-Man comes back and doesn't realize what's happened. And
I don't quite understand what is the deal. Like, where do we last leave Ant-Man?
Ant-Man was last seen in the quantum realm.
So he shrunk himself down so small that, yeah.
Yeah.
He's hanging out with the quarks.
Yeah, and the time vortexes, wink, wink.
Okay, yeah, that's what that was. Yeah, so there was some connection to that. You know, it's funny, like, we read a book a few years ago that got made into a HBO miniseries called The Leftovers, which is basically the same idea as this movie.
Yeah.
Just without all the superheroes. And, I mean, it was booked by Tom Perata. It was fantastic, and it still kind of hangs out in my head every so often, because, like, once you have kids, I think, maybe this is just me, but, like, you're always afraid that they're not going to, like, something horrible is going to happen, you know, and it's just about, you know, part of being a parent, I think, is managing that fear, because it never, ever goes away, at least it doesn't to me, you know. Like, today we woke up and found my son, he had thrown up in the middle of the night, and you know, it's always, when he was little, it was always like, oh my God, is he breathing? Is he awake? Is this like, because babies can die like that. And it's terrible. And like the first scene, and I didn't watch the show, but in the HBO show, the way that the disappearance, the event that happens where all these people just vanish out of nowhere, is that it's a woman with a baby, or the crying infant. She's carrying him in a car seat. She, you know, puts the car seat in the car. She was trying to get him to be quiet, and she puts him in the car, closes the door, and begins to walk around to the driver's side, and the crying stops. And then the next thing you know, cars are smashing into things, and general chaos is just happening all around, and she's looking for her child, and it's like, oh my God. Like, that's, and this is, you know, on a scale, I think in the book, it's like 10% of the world's population just vanishes one day. Mm-hmm. And here it's 50. You know, it's half.
Yeah, so it's a lot.
It's a lot more.
Well, they set up the whole idea. You know, what would you do to get everybody back?
Sure. And I think this is going to be a good movie. And I am looking forward to it. I think it's going to have a tremendous amount of weight. And it'll be far more, I think, serious than most of these movies have been, both thematically and emotionally. I just kind of wish we hadn't gone through all of Infinity War just to get there, you know? It was another... I think this one's like 3 hours long.
Well, I think that hurts this film that we're just seeing. Like, there was very much a kind of like, I don't care about this, because... And Marvel's going to have this problem after the Endgame movie. You know, if you've been following along with the rest of us from the beginning, it's been 10 years we've been watching these things.
Yeah,
that's a long time to be emotionally invested in a group of actors and storylines and things. And it feels a little weird to me that they have to bring this one character in last minute. You know, like, she basically falls out of the sky. And like, even if she was the coolest character ever, it feels a little, I mean, I haven't seen the film yet, but it seems an odd decision, or almost cheapens it, that we've been watching these other characters for 10 years and they have to bring in this person to help them, who we don't have any emotional attachment to the way we have with the other characters.
She's a walking deus ex machina.
Well, I hope that's not the case. I mean, she can help, certainly. And I think that's the idea. Like, well, we didn't want to just have her show up randomly without having a movie first. But if she saves the day single-handedly, I would be very disappointed. And not because she's a woman or whatever, but because she's not the character that we've come to know. And I always think of, like, the How I Met Your Mother finale. Uh-huh. When they were like, well, that's the way it is for the characters, and to have her, the main character, die and they get over it. Yes, but as an audience member who's been watching something for 9 years, I don't have that disconnect. I'm emotionally invested. So hopefully that's not what happens in this.
And what's interesting about that is that, and this is more about how I Met Your Mother than it is about Marvel, but like in this movie or in this series of movies, we've been watching Iron Man and Captain America and those guys, and they're the ones we have the connection with, and now we're asked to care about this lady too, and we don't. So we just haven't had the time, in addition to the film not being very good. In How I Met Your Mother, we had never met that character. She only shows up in the last season, and it didn't matter, A, because the actress who played her was so charming, but also because he's been talking about the mother for so long that even in absentia, she was a character in the story and was driving the whole thing forward in a way. And so to have this connection with someone that you've never met was sort of like, you know, and then to have it, we shouldn't have had that connection. We should have been happy that he got with Robin, I think was their point, which is just like, well, you've known Robin the whole time, right? And they've been good together, and shouldn't you want them to be together? I'm like, no, because you had your chance with this, like, and you dragged that out for years, matching her up with every other person you could find, and we're done with it. Like, in the first episode of the entire show, it says, like, and it's a joke. They build up the one character. It's like, this might be it. And it's like, and that's how I met your Aunt Robin. And so your brain goes, oh, that's never going to be her. Well, it wasn't technically, but, you know, so.
Right. So I think about, like, the Ant-Man sequel that came out after Infinity War. And everyone's like, it was a palate cleanser. You know, it was lighthearted. It happened before everybody, you know, got killed. And I'm like, yeah, but I saw everybody die. So when I'm watching this, I'm like, you know, my mind's kind of on something else right now. Like, and I told you about it, like, at the very end, the mid-credits and the end-credits scene connect back to the Infinity War where everybody was gone and something bad was happening. That's where you left me emotionally. So to pretend like, well, just ignore that for now and watch this lighthearted romp, it's hard to do that. You know, it's hard to compartmentalize.
Yeah.
I still paid the $11, but, you know, I walked out of there like, I'd really rather see the other one.
Yeah. That'll move. This movie has made, by the way, $500 million already.
Yeah. It was going to.
I'm still pretty amazed at some of these movies that do that. Because this one's not that good, and everyone knew it wasn't going to be that good, and everyone knew it was just like a placeholder until you get to the next one. Like, Ant-Man and the Wasp didn't make $500 million. I assume.
They advertised the hell out of this one, which I think helped.
Yeah, that's true.
And it was on a lot of screens. When I walked out of the theater, 4 other theaters in the 16 screens they had there were all Captain Marvel, playing at different times and different, you know, RPX and the 3D. I was like, well, they're really going for broke here.
Okay, so Ant-Man and the Wasp did make, you know, worldwide $622 million. So that's pretty good. This movie, how many screens did this play on? 4,310. So quite a few. Yeah. Curious to see what the... Would that really help it, though?
What?
Just the number of theaters.
Well, more theaters means more people have the opportunity to see it.
I guess so, but I don't know.
I don't know.
So Infinity War opened the biggest, almost 4,500. And then the rest of them, like, so this was like the number six in terms, you know, behind Iron Man 2, The Avengers, Spider-Man Homecoming, Guardians Volume 2, and then this. And so, yeah, you know, interesting. Very interesting. So I guess the next one would be Endgame.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the Marvel movie. Mm. Marvel movies.
And then right after that we get Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And then nothing for a year.
Oh yeah.
Well, 10 months or so. May 1, 2020 we're supposed to get something else.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the ultimate question, and we'll probably get to this in more detail after we see Endgame, but like, if they really make a big change and they, you know, Robert Downey Jr. goes and Chris Evans goes and Mark Ruffalo, if they all either leave the franchise or just are relegated to minor roles moving forward, like, oh, like Bruce Banner pops in, you know, for a 5-minute scene in the middle of Spider-Man 42 or whatever, like, are they going to be able to get everyone as excited about the next batch of heroes, or is that going to be like a real, like, how big of an uphill climb is that going to be?
It's going to be tough, and they better hire somebody really well, you know, really good to do it. Because I mean, Iron Man was a nobody, and they made him and Robert Downey Jr. into big stars, big property. It can be done. I mean, Black Panther was not popular. He was a step above blaxploitation, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, most of these characters weren't. Their biggest characters are still not owned by them. You know, the Fantastic Four, the Mutants, all those characters, Spider-Man at one point, those characters are not owned by them.
I think they bought Fox, though.
I know, but before that, so they were like, you know, if they're going to do this again, then they can. They just have a lot of homework to do. I mean, also, how do you top a villain who can wipe out half the universe? Like, what's the next big one going to be?
I don't know.
Three quarters of the universe? I don't know what you do.
Yeah, that's really sort of the thing. And what the hell were we just talking about? We're like, oh, Star Trek. We're talking about like every single scene, every episode of that show, the fate of the entire galaxy hangs in the balance every 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Like that can't be a thing.
It can't be the thing. You can't do that.
Because if you never lower the stakes, then just those are the new basic stakes, you know?
Yeah. Especially if nobody dies.
Right, yeah. So like, you know, if everything is an emergency, then nothing is an emergency, and that's just your new, you know, default. This should be obvious to most people, but it's not.
Yeah.
So, anyway, if you out there in Radio Land have any thoughts about Captain Marvel, and you want to tell us that we're wrong because we're cis white males, then you can tweet us or Instagram us at @3drinksinpod. You can comment on the Facebook page, or you can email us at 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. Like I said before, we are available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, all the places. Click subscribe, tell your friends, leave reviews. Anything else to add here? We're kind of long here.
No.
Okay.
I think we covered it.
I would hope so. All right, folks. As always, please drink responsibly, and we will talk to you all next time.
Yep. Take care.
Bye.